time we I studied the Haggadah, every time I studied the Haggadah, I always come back to, I'm always brought back to each year that there's a quandary that I struggle with. There's a controversy in the davening. Like in America, it's more of a controversy. Here in Israel, we don't really deal with the controversy about when we say the prayer for the state of Israel. You know, the famous words of Reshit Smichat Geulatenu. Like, is it the beginning of the Geula? Is it not the beginning of the Geula? Is it a time of redemption? Is it not a time of redemption? You see, it's obvious, right? Like I said, here it's much less of a controversy. Here it seems much more obvious than in the Geula, it's much more easy to debate. But so for that reason, I find it much more of a, like when we come to the Chag of Pesach, this idea of Geula, it becomes much more pronounced to me. And by that I mean that on the one hand, we're celebrating redemption, but on the other hand, we're not celebrating redemption. Meaning, the night of Pesach, the way the Pesach was designed, originally, it's of course supposed to be like when Hashem wants us to celebrate Pesach in Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Like the idea of Yitzhak Mitzrayim is Me'abdut L'Chevrut, and where are we supposed to be celebrating this Chevrut? In Israel. With what?
The Beit HaMikdash.
Right. And because we have the Beit HaMikdash, we celebrate the
Mashiach.
Well, before we get the Mashiach. Before we even had the Mashiach. Before you needed a Mashiach. Okay? So give me that blue Haggadah. Right? This. Right? We're supposed to celebrate the Pesach with, ideally, the Korban Pesach. Right. Korban Pesach is the real Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is the actualization, is the way you're supposed to celebrate Pesach night. And I think I alluded to this last week, that the whole 14th, the idea of the day of the 13th afternoon is supposed to be a chag of offering the Korban Pesach. How functionally different our Pesach would be if everybody had to bring Korban Pesach, and you'd have to be in Yerushalayim to eat it. Sure, the day of the you offer during the day. Like the what's the offering of the Korban Pesach? How is it a Korban? It's slaughtered in the Beit HaMikdash. Right? And the blood is poured on the Mizbeach. You have to be in Yerushalayim. How? It's a total balagan. Right. It was a total balagan. It was controlled pandemonium. You know, have you ever been to Rami Levy on Erev Chag?
Well, I was actually thinking...
And somehow it all works, right? You know what I'm saying?
I was thinking more along the lines of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. Yeah, when everyone goes to the Kotel,
right?
Totally full, and there's tons and tons of people, and they're just like standing there dominating, and it's fine. But if you actually have to do something,
well, the Mishnah actually goes through. The Gemara describes like the whole process. They divided people into different like they had time slots, in a sense, and you know they had the first time slot, and then they blew the shofar, and then the second time slot. Nowadays, I'm sure it'd be much like you imagine in the future, like whatever it's been the Korban Pesach. They'll divide you exactly by time, and they'll send you an SMS on your phone. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be, without a doubt, it'll be computerized. You show up exactly the right time, and you bring your Korban Pesach. And the logistics... What?
And they'll always be running late.
I doubt it. I think the Kohanim will be running on time. You know what I'm saying? Because you got to be done. They want to go home, too. And everybody... That's not the hard part. I think the hard part is everybody is in Yerushalayim. Like, for the night of Pesach. You can't bring the Korban outside of Yerushalayim. It has to be eaten in Yerushalayim in somebody's house or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But it's just all night.
I can't imagine how that would work.
What?
I can't imagine how that would work today.
There's plenty of room. I mean, there's rooms. If you took every room in Yerushalayim and converted it into a seder, you know what I'm saying? Everybody's got like every classroom, every hotel room.
Though.
We're not going there. Okay?
Hopefully they'll leave it their own volition.
Every classroom, every hotel room, every everything. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's
for all
that's what
in the world.
That's. How many are there? 10 million? 12 million? You know what I'm saying? It's not so crazy. It's not insane. It's not impossible.
They'll
shut down. No, forget your car. You know what I'm saying? You just leave it outside.
Forget buses. How buses going to run with so many people?
Right. You just walk, whatever. Okay. So, but that being said, so when we come to the Seder now, right? The Seder, as is described, we'll see, was designed for the Jewish people not living in Eretz Yisrael, in a sense, and not having the Korban Pesach. How do I know this? I know this from a few things. First of all, at the very beginning, what did we say? We say in the very Haggadah, right? The text of the Haggadah, the very beginning of Halach Ma'anya. Okay, Halach Ma'anya. I'm not going to read all of this because I want to get to the end. Halach Ma'anya is in what language? Aramaic. Why? So, well, they spoke that in Eretz Yisrael also. And we say the following.
Oh, because of the language of
Hashata. Actually, they spoke in Israel. They also spoke Aramaic. Okay, but they wanted people to understand. Hashata Hacha. Hashata, this year, Hacha. We are here. Hashana Haba B'Arad Yisrael. So next year, we will be in Arad Yisrael, which is Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, when we're supposed to say this? When in Chutz La'aretz. Hashata Avdei. This year, we are slaves. L'shana haba b'nei charim. Next year, right, we will be b'nei charim. We'll be free people. I.e., the Baal Haggadah did not imagine a future in which one of those conditions would be true, but the other one would not. So I always struggle with this because of the one. So what am I supposed to do with this text? You know, I'm going to say Hashata Hacha L'shana Haba B'Arad Yisrael. But Hashata this year. What do I mean when I say Hacha means here? This year I'm here. Next year I should be in Israel. So like, what do I mean? This year I'm in Israel. Next year I should also be in Israel. That's not what he meant. It means this year we are not in Israel. Next year we'll be in Israel. So what do we mean when we say this? What? That's what I asked you. But didn't you say? Didn't they say that the Gula has already begun? Okay. Correct. Obviously. But you're reading in words that are not intended. Meaning we're not gonna change the Haggadah, but we need a Haggadah that speaks to our this, what do you say? It's so obvious, Reshit Tzvichat Geula Teinu. And we're stuck with the Haggadah that was not designed for this.
Hang on a second. That means that they didn't have a Haggadah before they were in Gaul?
Yes, they did. It was very different. They didn't say Halach Ma'anya in Aramaic. They did. They started with Manishtana. And their Manishtana was also different because Shabbachol HaLeilod, we eat any kind of meat. Halayla Hazeh, only Tzali, and you know what I'm saying? Halayla Hazeh Korbanot. They did have Avadim Hayinu, but it was just different. You know what I'm saying? But nowadays, we're locked into the text that we have for obvious reasons. Let's look at the end. We end off Magid the same way. Okay?
End of Magid?
The very end of Magid. The bracha of Magid. See the very end, the bracha, bracha tashem elokim melech olam. You pick up your glass, okay? You find it? Right before Rachta. You know where Rachta is?
No.
You know? Okay. You're following along.
Sorry.
Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Asher Ge'alanu Ve'Ge'al Et Avoteinu Mimitzrayim. He redeemed us and redeemed our forefathers. V'Higianu Halayla Hazeh Le'Chol Bo Matzah U'Maror. Okay. What's not there? Obviously, Le'Chol Bo Pesach. Right. So it was understood that we're reciting this bracha. Okay. Kein Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoteinu yageinu l'mo'adim v'ergeim acharim habaim likrotenu l'shalom. Hashem should bring us to new mo'adim and regalim. Smechim b'binyan irecha v'sasim b'vavodatecha. We will rejoice in the rebuilding of your city and we will rejoice in your worship. V'nochal sham min hazvachim u'min hapsachim asher yagia damam al kir mizbachacha l'ratzon. And there we will eat from the Korban Zvachim and the Psachim, right? You know, from the Korban Chagiga, the Korban Pesach, that their blood will reach their blood, the wall of Mizbeach. V'nodeh l'chashir chadash al ge'ulateinu ve'al pedut nafshinu. And then we will sing a new song for our redemption. So in essence, it's interesting. What's like the night of Pesach is supposed to be about celebrating the past. But in reality, in this bracha, what's this bracha for?
Redemption.
Which redemption?
The future redemption.
Right, so this language is actually a little bit easier, because you could read in, okay, we're in Yerushalayim, it's not like we're actually physically in the Galut. But it's taken for granted. Okay? Asher Yagir,
we are,
saying,
we don't have the
Smeichim b'binyan irecha, the building of your city, v'sasim ba'avodatecha. So you could say, okay, write the Beit HaMikdash. It's just not built. All of the things that we understand, that we know, that we read into the words. But we're sort of stuck in a sense here, because on the one hand, we are in the middle of the process of Geula, but at the same time, we're praying for the beginning of the process of Geula. When in reality, what we really need is we want to pray for the end of the process of Geula. And so I think that's just an interesting starting point when you discuss, when you approach the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. Right, because it was always the way the Haggadah is described, it was always we look to the past, we look at the past redemption in order to look to the future. And here, like and the past was Mitzrayim, and here was the future, the Mashiach, and we're like smack dab in the middle. But now we're having the same text, whereas we're like here. You know, much, much closer to the end point. And we're in Eretz Yisrael, and we're like, and then the thing that we're missing is the Mashiach, is the Pesach.
It seems like from the text that we would only say the Shir once we're able to give Korbanot.
Right? No. V'noda Shir Chadash. What's the Shir Chadash? The new song. Why would we sing a new song? A new song for what?
For being able to
new situation.
Meaning we're going to sing praise to God just like we sang Az Yashir when Hashem redeemed us then. So too, we will sing a new song when we're finally redeemed, ultimately.
So it's not talking about the Geula, like, now.
No, what's it talking about?
When we already have the Beit HaMikdash.
Talking about the Geula now? The beginning of the Geula.
No, when we already have
this,
the Beit HaMikdash.
This leads to that.
Isn't that part of
the whole issue that we get stuck in the text that we have from many hundreds of years ago, and it takes I don't even know what for them to get changed and updated for their country?
We're not going to change and update it.
It doesn't happen.
One of the things that's so beautiful and so powerful about this text is just how ancient it is. Haggadah Shel Pesach, as we're going to see, like a lot of the things that we say, were written in the times of the Mishnah, directly after the structure of the Beit HaMikdash. Like, mamash afterwards. One of the things that I love very much about the Haggadah is how ancient it is. Just how old it is. It's not something newfangled. This is a text that Jews have been saying for thousands and thousands of years. Right? And there's that sense of history, that sense of connection. But at the same time, that being the case, when does it change? You know what I'm saying? Something is different than hasn't been different in the 2,000 years of the exile.
When it changed, like when there's the Beit HaMikdash and presumably then there will also be a Sanhedrin.
Yes.
Won't that be when it changes?
Yes. It will change. It'll have to change back. Right? We don't have a choice. I mean, it should change. But here... But this is our conundrum. We're stuck in a place where... We're in the middle of a process. We say everybody sees it. It's obvious to us. If it's so obvious to you, how come it doesn't reflect itself in the ritual that you observe? Like, we struggle to create these, you know, the prayer for the state of Israel and Yom HaAtzmaut. It's sort of religious and it's not sort of religious. And these things should articulate themselves. You know, this is our religious worldview. It should articulate itself in the way that we celebrate Pesach, the way that we celebrate the Chag HaGeula. And yet, does it? No, nothing has changed. Nothing at all has changed.
Oh yeah, it gets more difficult with construction.
Well, the Seder hasn't changed at all. There is no mention of Medinat Yisrael in the Seder, is there? Do you mention Medinat Yisrael at all? Shouldn't it? Shouldn't that be the one night more than anything where we should somehow mention Reishit Tzivat Gulatenu? Like, okay, it's not all, but, you know, where is the Shira Chadasha? Alright, anyway, this I mentioned.
That's not going to come until later. Only further along in the process. Like,
correct. It's not the final redemption. I totally agree with you, but there's something missing. Something not there. Let's go back to a few pages before. Rabban Gamliel, Aya Omer. Last time we spoke about Dayenu. I want to do the next section. I want to do Rabban Gamliel. I'm glad she's in such a good mood.
She's
in such a good mood.
I have heard of people who do add either a fifth cup or a fifth question, I don't remember, a fifth something, or a fifth son, maybe.
A fifth son?
something.
No, they say the first son is the one, well, who doesn't ask at all, who's not there. The one, the first son is the one who's not there.
Something that they add with their own text that they've written.
And how do we react to that? What's our reaction to that? Somebody religious?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
I could guess, but I'm not going to guess.
No, it's something
But it's certainly not universal or widespread.
No.
Right, not at all.
No, it's like a religious intellectual academic.
Yeah, there. I guess, but I'm not gonna. Rabbi Gamliel Ayah Omer.
Where is this?
Right before, right there. Right.
Past, oh, here.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's see if I can help you. One second. Yeah, right.
That's fine.
Right before
Pesach.
Right, we did Dayenu, and then we listed all the great things that God did for us right here. Okay. Now, actually, at the quote, you have two witnesses for us.
Two hours sleep.
What?
I don't do
that.
Two hours sleep in the middle of the night.
What you got there, Maria? What do you have? What? You go to Tila? Go to Ima, Tila, go to Ima. You go to Tila? To Ima, let's go.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, right here.
Okay. Rama Gamliel Hayah Omer. Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu bePesach lo yata yedei chovato. Rabbi Gamliel would say, anyone who don't say these three things on Pesach did not fulfill his obligation. Be'elu heim, and these are they: Pesach, Matzah, u'Maror. If you didn't say these three things on Pesach, you don't fulfill obligation. And they are Pesach and Matzah and Maror. Okay, we're going to stop for a second on two questions that we have here. First question is, what does it mean, lo yatza yedei chovato? He didn't fulfill his obligation. His obligation to do what?
To tell about the story of Pesach.
Okay, so you're saying if I didn't mention three items, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, then I didn't fulfill my obligation to tell the story?
That's what he's saying.
Why not? Let's assume that you're correct. Why not? What's the story of Egypt? No. What's the essence of the story?
That out.
Right, God took it out of Egypt. Right. Okay, there were these symbols. Okay, they offered the carbon Pesach. Right. But he didn't say, no. He didn't say Hashem Pesach Halabayit.
No, but what is...
Yeah, there's
those
no
three
redemption
words.
What? Yeah. It's not just these three words. It's the three... Meaning, what's he going to say? We're going to see, by the way, we're going to see that it's not just to say the things. What's the point of the things? We're going to show the things in order to explain each of these items on the table. Let's just read on, okay? Pesach. Shayu avotenu ochlim bizman shebeit hamikdash kayam. You like that, right? That our forefathers would eat when the Beit HaMikdash was established, was in existence. Al shuma. What's it for? Al shum shepasach HaKadosh Baruch Hu al batei avotenu b'mitzrayim. It's because God skipped over our forefathers in Egypt. And you shall say, this is the Pesach offering to God. Asher Pasach al betei b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim, that God skipped over the houses of the children of Egypt, of Israel in Egypt. Okay, when he smote them. So, of course I mentioned the Pesach. Didn't we already speak about, what do I have to mention the Pesach in and of itself? What am I doing when I signify, when I point out the Pesach?
Hashem's hand in it.
But I already spoke about Hashem's hand. Abadim Hayinu L'Paro Mitzrayim. Vayitziyenu Hashem. We already said Abadim Hayinu. Like the very beginning of the Seder. The kid asked Mani Shana.
This is that they didn't die in the Makat B'chorot.
Oh, no. So,
isn't it?
Wasn't
the Pesach Bayit with the Makat B'chorot?
Correct. Okay, but we already know that. I mean, you already told your... First of all, any young child is already sleeping by now. Right? So... So,
daylight
yeah, especially. So, by this time the kid is asleep, and so in order to alleviate that problem, in order to deal with that problem, what did you do? You told your child the story already. Avinu Hayinu, right? For younger children, you've told this story. Hashem saved us. He took us out, and he killed all the firstborn. Why do I have to mention the Korban Pesach specifically? You understand what I'm saying? He's saying Pesach. I'm noting that there was a Pesach, and I'm telling you what it's for.
Maybe it's a link to the future. Yeah. Because without us coming out, there's no point unless we have the Beit HaMikdash and we can serve them.
Right, because the
I certainly led you in that direction. Yeah. But, yeah, but I want to say something even deeper. Matzazu. Let's go to the next one. Matzazu. Ashanuch, sha'anu ochlin. By the way, what's the difference between Pesach and the way we say it? We say Pesach and then we say matzah. Matzah. Matzah, no, next word.
Oh, yochlu. Wow.
Matzah. Zu. What does zu mean?
This.
Which matzah? What's that?
The one you're eating today.
When I say matzah zu, see what he says? See the instruction guy? What do you say when you say what before? You pick it up. Right. You're saying, you notice it says Pesach. It doesn't say Pesach there. It says Pesach, fine. We just don't do anything. And then you say matzah, you pick up the matzah. You say this matzah. She'anu ochlim al shuma. It's not some recitation. You say, hey, see this?
This.
Why are we eating this? Okay. Ashum shalom, he speak with Zekam Shalaboteinu lahachmitz. Because they were not able to allow there because the dough could not rise until God redeemed them. Shnei Amaretz, it says.
Isn't there something that we do for Pesach, like you have the symbolic thing, even though it's not actually?
Yeah, the shank bone. Okay, what?
Don't you should point to.
Exactly.
No. Exactly the point. You do not point to the shank bone. Why? What does it say? Look in your instruction book. What does it say?
That's not the.
What does it say? Does it say point to the shank bone?
No.
Is that only the nostrum?
You don't point. Does it say in the nostrum? That is the point to the shank bone? You don't point to the shank bone. The reason you don't point to the shank bone is because the shank bone is not the Korban Pesach.
No, but it's symbolic.
Right.
Correct, but it's not it.
Obviously, it's not it. We know it's not it.
Well, that's the.
Yeah, but is
that's the dichotomy. That's the dichotomy. Is this matzah? That is matzah, yes.
For us, it is.
That is matzah. No, that is matzah. That is not Pesach.
But it's not the matzah
that
they.
Why do you have the shank bone? Why do you have the
egg? They took out. It's our matzah.
What? What's the point of the shank bone and the egg if it's not it? That's exactly the point. It goes to the symbol. Back to the symbol of
Korban Pesach.
Why do you need the symbol of Korban Pesach? You don't have it. It's gone. Not there. You don't eat it.
That we will have
you don't
it.
Eat the shank bone. It's reminding you of what you're not eating.
Right.
It's reminding you of what you don't have.
So why don't you have a place for it and without anything?
And have it empty.
Yeah.
Like Eliyahu, see? Like the Shisei Shel Eliyahu?
Because if you don't have it, you forget about it.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying have it a place for it.
Yeah, but what is it?
What do you use for your chagiga? What do you use for your... You have an egg. Don't you have an egg? Right? Anybody notice? What is an egg and also a symbol of?
Morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about this.
There's a huge...
Why do we all do egg and salt water?
No, the egg and the salt water, I don't know, you eat the egg, that's your karpas? The egg on the Seder plate.
Yeah.
I actually have to do a little more research. Every year I say to myself, like sometime on the Seder night, I'm like, the Seder plate is so interesting. It's like so fascinating, the plate. And I actually always believed that the Seder plate was meant to be eaten from. Like we have this symbolic Seder plate. But it wouldn't be much cooler if you could have like a real Seder plate on one of those like Lazy Susans.
Yeah,
you could like twist it around,
my
you know what I'm saying? I have this like, you know,
that's
idea
cool.
of like making one where the matzah goes in the middle.
Basket,
and you just like, you know, you turn it around and you have like big circular Seder table and you just
do that.
You know, do you?
People, my son-in-law who's triple A. Whatever. His family's from Tripoli.
Tripoli, okay. Tripolian.
Tripoli.
He's Libyan.
What?
He's Libyan.
Yes, his family's from Tripoli.
Yeah, I don't know.
Their family, for Pesach, they have apparently a huge basket, and that's what people eat from. That's actually from the.
But it's the Seder plate? That's
the plate?
That's cool. Now, that's the way it's supposed to be. The Seder plate was not supposed to be this symbolic thing. Meaning, at the end of the night, you've eaten your matzah, you've eaten your karpas, you've eaten your. You've dipped in the salt water, you've had your charoset, you had your maror, but what's left on the plate? Yeah, right. It's like, it's empty. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to our Seder plate, where everything is just kind of symbolic. You don't touch any of it. And then you don't really, you're not acutely aware, you're not sensing. And what I noticed, actually, there's a connection, actually, between the night of Pesach and Tisha B'Av. Anybody know the night of Pesach?
Do it.
What?
There's nothing saying that you can't take the stuff.
Oh no, you can eat it.
The Balabite could take that.
Yeah, I think you should.
I think you should.
Maybe I will this year. I'm going to tell you.
Yes.
Right? You know what I'm saying? Because that it's much more.
Mochashi.
Yeah, I mean the idea of the Seder plate actually was also I think each person was supposed to have their own Seder plate.
That's right.
Like I don't know when do we get to this idea that right that you know like you have your own cup of wine, you have your own matzot. This idea of like a king doesn't, you don't share. I mean, come on. You know what I'm saying? You have your own. It's much, much nicer. It's much more interesting. Okay, so you say matzah zu. You say matzah zu. You say matzah zi. This matzah. Okay, you pick it up. As opposed to the Pesach, which you don't pick up. Ashuma, what are we eating? Ashum shalohi speak b'tzeikam. We'll get to that in a second. Skip to the maror. Maror. Ze. Again, you're picking up the maror. This maror. Sha'anu achlim ashuma. Ashum shmiru ha-mitzvim in chayavu tim mitzayim. Okay, so it's just interesting to know that again, if you look carefully, you have Pesach, and then you have matzah zo, maror ze. Okay, so now that we've seen this, when Rabbi Gamliel says, Kol shelo amar shloshad barim elu, lo yata yidei chovato, okay, what did he want us to accomplish by mentioning these three things? Why were these three things so important? There's a machloket about it in the Bishonim, but I want to share with you also an idea that I thought of. Anyone? No? I'll tell you. One second. The Mishnah also says the following. What you're reading here in this Haggadah is actually a Mishnah M'sachim. I'll just read the Mishnah, see if you can follow along in your Haggadah. Rabbi Gamliel haya omer, kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu b'pesach, lo yata yidei chovato, ve'elu hem, pesach matzah maror. You see what I'm saying? Meaning, this is not some tefillah that they wrote, that Chazal wrote later. This is a Mishnah from Masechet Pesachim that you're reading. You're reading something from the times of the Tanaim that goes way, 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 way back. Okay, so this is something that their parents have been doing with their children for literally thousands of years, for millennia. Okay, so who is this Rabbi Gamliel? Again, we get back to this very fascinating discussion of which Korban Pesach it is. Okay, so there's somebody named the Rashbatz, whose actual name is, Rashbatz's name is Rabbi Shimon Rabsemach Duran. Oh, we came across him last week. Okay. Right? Was he from Algeria or Spain? Do you remember? The Budraham was from Algeria. Algeria, maybe? Okay.
No, I think he was from Spain.
Okay. He says something from Spain.
Where's Mimi?
Okay, right. Very good.
I'm just thinking because I don't know, so I remember.
He says the following. He says, who is this Rabbi Gamliel? Okay. He says there were a number of Rabbi Gamliels. Rabbi Gamliel was the name of the... You might want to get that. Rabbi Gamliel is the... He's just curious. He's just playing. Unbelievable. You have to check your whole house for chametz. You have to check.
I'm giving it to the last minute.
Yeah. Okay.
Makes sense.
I left him twice. Okay.
So you switch over the
paper. So he said there were a number of Rabbi Gamliels, and Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi. There were a number of Rabbi Gamliels, and it was a family dynasty from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi down. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Rabbi Gamliel... The sons and the grandsons, there were Rabbi Gamliels and there were other Rabbi Gamliels. So he says, this Rabbi Gamliel was not the elder Rabbi Gamliel that lived in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay? Rather, Zehaya ben Bino, this was his grandson, Vahaya Achar HaKhorban. It was after the destruction. You could imagine, like, I think about that, those Psachim, those first Psachim, there's another allusion to this designing of the Seder being after the Korban HaBayit. Can anybody tell me where else in the Seder we have an allusion to the Seder taking place after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash? That the Seder we have is the Seder of the future Geula? Anybody know? No? Okay, where is there an allusion to? Rabbi Akiva,
yeah.
Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And where were they sitting up? They were sitting up in the Aliyah Inn. Anybody know? In Bnei Brak. Right? Why in the world? Remember we said, where was the Seder supposed to be? Where's everybody supposed to be? Yerushalayim. Right. Why in the world would you have your Seder in Bnei Brak?
Because they didn't have...
They're not right. Correct. That's like, where are you having your Seder? Right? Ba'atid Lavo. That will never be a question. It will be, did you get a room somewhere? You know what I'm saying?
Where how much did you pay for your room?
Actually, I'm not sure that's true necessarily. Because I think we'll get to the point where everybody, you're bringing your own Seder. You're bringing a mangal. Right? You don't even bring a mangal. You have your Korban Pesach. Like, there's... You have to
sleep somewhere.
Not really.
You bring your tent.
Right, not really.
Even.
Wow.
How long is the Seder going to go?
Like that.
How long is the Seder going to go? You eat your Korban Pesach, okay? Everybody else.
The Seder's going to be on
air? No, the night of. Until midnight, till Chatzot. Chatzot is 2 o'clock in the morning. Then what do? You like go to sleep. Everybody just like lie down there. You know what I'm saying? You have cots and everything. Sleep in your table. You wake up in the morning. You go to shul.
But where's your table?
What?
Where's your table?
Right there. Yeah.
Are you working on campus?
It's not going to be a fancy thing.
It's not going to
be. No, but why do we still have it? Why would we still have it?
Korban Pesach?
Yeah, and the and Pesach. Because we have the Beit HaMikdash.
Ah, so that's one because the Monty, the Haggadah actually alludes to that. The Monty Sefer, Yom Sidcha Mitzvah, Kol Yemecha Hayareinim. The Chachamim say Yemecha Yecha Ba'olam Hazeh, Kol Yemecha Yecha La'avid Imot HaMashiach. Because even when Mashiach comes, Mitzrayim still was the birth of the nation. Right? It was still the formation of the Jewish people. The Exodus, of course.
We always need to remember where we came from.
Okay.
Why we're here as a nation in the first place. Mm-hmm.
So the Rashbaz continues and says, he says the following.
Otherwise we become like Gamliel.
Bisman Rabban Gamliel Zeh, in the time of this Rabban Gamliel, Charav HaBayit, the house was destroyed, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Sha'al mi ispianus shelo yisuk anasiyut. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked that the family line of the prince should continue, and this was Bavadai ki zeh Rabban Gamliel ra'ah habayit bebinyano. This Rabban Gamliel, he saw the Beit Hamikdash. Ubiyamav hayu osin Pesach k'mo shenizkar b'Sanhedrin, and he remembers the Korban Pesach. So if you think of that, now let's think of his Mishnah in these terms. They had a very fundamental question. With no Korban Pesach, what is the Seder? Remember we said, like, in the times of the Beit HaMikdash, the whole Seder was surrounded by the Korban Pesach. That was the nature of the Korban Pesach, of the Seder. That's what it was all about. So imagine now I took your Seder, and I said to you, you know the most important thing about the Seder, the thing that everybody surrounds it, the thing that everybody uses in order to symbolize the redemption? Have one without it. What's that supposed to be like?
Like morning, like now.
Yeah, like morning. Like morning. Like morning. For them, it must have been the worst night of the year. The worst night of the year.
It must have been so depressing.
Yeah. So I said there was a connection between Pesach and Tisha B'Av. You know that it always comes out on the calendar, always, 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 that the night that Pesach falls out is the night that Tisha B'Av falls out. So Pesach falls out on a Friday night, Tisha B'Av also falls out on a Friday night, and we'll push it to Sunday. There's this connection between the two, redemption and the lack of redemption. And even I saw this beautiful idea in the name of Rav, this is my amazing Zionist Haggadah, Rav Arieli, I think. They should translate this one. This is like the Rav Cook Haggadah, like it's called the Yashah. I came out last year, it's really, really good. One second. So he says there's an allusion on Eicha. In Eicha, in Midrash Eicha, we say Hasbi'eni mimromim zelil Pesach, Hervani la'ana zelil Tisha B'Av. That there's a connection between Lel Pesach and Lel Tisha B'Av. He says, why is there a connection? So Rav Charlap, okay, Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap was the head of Merkaz Arab. He was a big Talmid of Rav Kook. So he says, what's the connection between Pesach and Tisha B'Av? So he said the following. He said, nowadays, in theory, even without a Beit HaMikdash, you could offer the Korban Pesach. There is a halachic way of doing it. Even without a Beit HaMikdash, there's a way of offering the Korban Pesach. So he says, nonetheless, he says, why are we not offering the Korban Pesach? We are prevented, he says, mivnei b'chiya shel chinam shebachu ba'oto halayla b'tisha ba'av. Okay, because on the night of Tisha B'Av, when we cried, we said, we don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael, so therefore, Hashem said, you cry now, okay, you cried in that night, okay, then you're going to cry forever. And you're not going to be able to fulfill that your ultimate redemption. There's this connection between the morning of Pesach and the morning of morning of Tisha B'Av and Pesach. It's very pronounced when we think about it. So let's go back to Rabban Gamliel.
Is that why we can't give korbanot altogether?
Well, we can't give korbanot because we're not the Beit HaMikdash. There's a lot of halachic nuance
in the desert.
Ah, but once the Beit HaMikdash was built. Once the Beit HaMikdash was built, it became forbidden. No, you're not allowed to bring any korbanot outside the Beit HaMikdash, even after it was destroyed. Right, there was a permission to bring in bamot. Bamot are private altars. And when the Beit HaMikdash was established in Yerushalayim, the bamot were stopped. Hashem said, this is my Beit Kodshi and nothing else. Okay, but now that we have that in this context, so let's understand. Rabban Gamliel came along and said, Kol Shelo Amar Shlosha Dvarim, I'm telling you, in order to fulfill your Yodei Chovato on Pesach, on Lel Pesach, you have to mention these three things. Pesach and Matzah and Maror. There has to still be an allusion to the Pesach. Without which, you haven't fulfilled Yedei Chovato. What is Yedei Chovato? That's a machloket. Some say Yedei Chovato is Yedei Chovato is Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. You have an obligation to tell your children the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And if you don't actually mention Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, you haven't fulfilled Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Others say, I think I said the Ran or whatever.
We get this from Shema, right? That's how we know it's a Chiyuv. She's putting water.
Ah, okay. Great. Others say, no. You haven't fulfilled your obligation of eating of the mitzvah, achilat matzah and maror, or Pesach, whatever, if you don't point to them and connect them to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. So actually, I thought this is a very, either way, it's a very beautiful idea. He came along and said the following. He said, according to the opinion that you haven't fulfilled Yitzhak Mitzrayim unless you point to these things. Why should I have to point to these things on my table in order to fulfill the commandment of Yitzhak Mitzrayim? And I think the answer is, how many of you are educators? One? You an educator? No? Anyone who's in education knows that there's two aspects to education that very often are disconnected. Okay? Education, on the one hand, is abstract. It's intellectual. Did you say you had books? You had all these English books that they never used? Okay? Right? Anybody ever learn grammar? You ever learn grammar? Like diktuk? Right?
Yeah.
I hate learning diktuk. Why do you hate learning diktuk? Right.
I learned grammar.
Ani holech, at holech, tu holech.
And then you get to Israel and can't put a sentence together.
Why? Ah, excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Beautiful.
You said I learned Hebrew for 12 years.
It's not practical.
Ah, very good. Very good. That's the idea. Because one part of learning that is this like intellectual academic exercise that doesn't have any ramifications in the real world. How do they really say it? How do you really speak? Okay? So on the other hand, it's very good. So on the other hand, you could go to Opan, right? And then they'll teach you how to talk. You're talking, you're talking, you're talking, but then you try to start writing. What do you realize? I don't know how to put a word together. I can't put two sentences together. So education...
I didn't have that.
What?
I didn't have that.
You don't have that. But good, true education...
Combines the two.
Combines the two. Combines the academic... Like, you know, like anybody... Have you ever done it like... I don't know, pick your... What's your field? Therapy? You're a therapist?
Yeah, I have a BA in psychology.
Okay, great. BA in psychology. Terrific.
Social worker.
Pick your field. It really doesn't matter. Okay? Take psychology. Okay, when you spend your BA learning psychology, did you learn any therapy whatsoever?
No.
Right. What do you learn?
Technical stuff. Yeah,
no, right. Not technical. You learn the theory of psychology.
Right.
You learn,
and that's the difference.
You learn Freud and Piaget and Neuro and this.
I mean technical and what does this mean and what does
exactly.
that mean, you know?
But you have no idea how to actually do psychologist,
yeah.
Right? And what happens if on the other hand, right, if somebody would just say, oh, just say this and this and this and that, but didn't have a real understanding of what psychology was all about, they would really not be a very good psychologist at all. Right? Every field is like that. There's a need on the one hand to learn the understanding, to really have a good intellectual academic understanding, and then somehow translate that into something real.
Well, that's why you have a course at social work where actually you have practical work as well.
Right, and chinuch in the world we do it too. They have course echiduch that the girls hate, that they're boring and they're dry. And then they have a called avodah ma'asit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You have
why
to connect.
Why haven't they gotten this in school? They still teach. It depends on the school.
It depends on the school. It's so interesting. What? Every school is plagued by this question. You know, on the one hand, you have some schools. Imagine a school where they learn, the kids can learn, and they can read Gemara beautifully, but then but they don't really think that has any impact on the music that they listen to and the movies that they watch and the things that they see or what they're going to do with their lives. So that's a terrible tragedy. On the other hand, imagine a school where they have great experiences and they take them to this place, they take them to that place, and they have two lim and this and that, but the kid can't open a Rashi and can't read for his life. Each one is a failure, right? And schools all struggle with this problem of on the one hand instilling skills, and on the other hand, instilling passion. Those two go together. So here you have, the story is great. The story is the background. Let me tell you a story. So the kid says, great, nice story. What does that have to do with me? So Rabbi Gamliel comes along and says, Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim. Right? No. The things that you're eating on the table today, right, they're not independent of, the experience you're having today is not independent of this story. You know, too many Jews. I didn't write this, but too many Jews, as we know, they do the Haggadah, and they read the words, and then they say, okay, let's eat. Right? And they don't see, and even if they eat the matzah and the maror, they don't see any connection between the story that they either told or didn't tell, between the words that they read, and the food that they're eating. Right? That's not an educational experience. That's not v'higadat al-labincha. V'higadat al-labincha is, this is the story, and this is the experience, and the two go together, and they're there to complement one another. And that's what Chazal wanted to have.
So this is a guide how to teach.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. Very beautifully, actually. Right? You have not fulfilled Behigarata Labincha unless you have translated your message into an experience that will then have meaning. And we're eating this food. Kol Shalom, if you didn't have these three things, oh yeah, Tayyid Chovato. You haven't fulfilled your obligation.
So it's actually also
I like that idea. I made that up. I thought
it was a nice idea. Doing it in a language that people begin to understand. Like when we were in Kutzla, when I was growing up, some people would read in Hebrew and other people would read it in
absolutely.
English.
Absolutely. No,
it actually makes sense to read in English if that's the only language. If you don't understand what you're reading in the Hebrew.
I think actually even more than that, the text, it's a text. Very often we sort of associate texts, we don't even think about it as telling a story. I think it's really important to stop at the Seder and talk. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing to read and say, like, but it's tell the story. You have to tell the story. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to take forever. You have to tell the story. Because if you don't tell the story and you just read the Haggadah, you've lost the forest for the trees in a sense. You know what I'm saying? The Haggadah was supposed to be a starting point, a basis.
But it is very long. There's not much time for discussion.
How children are young. When your children are young, she's right.
What?
There's not much time for discussion. They can only go so far. They can only go so long. You know. So, but that's great. I would spend more time on the story and less time on the Haggadah and the, oh, why did he say this? Why did he say that?
Haven't done it.
You know why? But that's because we've been raised in a certain way that having done it is more important than actually doing it. You understand what I'm saying? Oh, I have to do it. I have to say the words. I have to whatever. As opposed to...
So how would you say we couldn't balance it?
I don't know. That's up to you. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Like, I think, by the way, you have to discuss it with your husband beforehand and have a plan. I want to, you know what I'm saying? It's always good to come into the Seder with like 4 or 5 questions. Like, let's talk about the story. They know the story already. Obviously, they know the story, but never hurts to tell it again. You know what I mean? Never hurts to let's go over the basics, just to make sure we all know the basics, and have a few like interesting questions. I happen to be very taken with this question of how are we supposed to celebrate? Here I'm in Eretz Yisrael, and we're Geula, but we're not Geula. You know what I'm saying? I think that's more of a teenage question. Like, how does it articulate itself? How are we supposed to relate to Pesach and to celebrate Geula? On the one hand, and understand also what we're missing at the same time. Where are we now?
So all the time, it's not just a Pesach.
Right, but on Pesach we're thinking about this ourselves as a people. We're thinking about our creation as a Jewish nation. That's really the focus of the night. So when we're focusing on this and we're thinking about this, right, where are we and how do we get to where we want to go? And that's
yeah, I mean we also made Aliyah, so we can say that we can feel the difference of coming from Kutzaret and feeling the same in Kutzaret and being in Eretz Yisrael, being so comfortable with it, like our kids that were born here, they don't know what Kutzaret is even. They hear Christmas carols and they think they're Israeli tunes. Like,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't know what it is. You put up the sukkah decorations and that sukkah decoration's not Israeli. Like, they don't have that connection. So here as well, that realizing that things aren't the way they should be. So in a way, we kind of do realize it because we've come from one extreme to a middle and we kind of can picture that things should
correct.
Be a
little bit. Correct, so nice.
But they, this is their reality. They kind of think this is it. It's like, we've done it.
Okay. So then, if I were you, I would highlight
yes,
on.
I, really like
I would
that.
Highlight on Matzazu, yes, Marazur. Where's the Pesach?
I really like that. I really like.
You know,
it's just right for me.
It's so interesting. I'll share with you 2 ideas from my Rab Cookie Haggadah. Okay, so he says. Of course, says the Maror is very beautiful. What's the power of the Maror? He says the Maror. You think the Maror is a symbol of our slavery? But the Maror is not a symbol of our slavery. The Maror is a symbol of our freedom. He says, because somebody who's really is a slave, and he has a slave mentality, doesn't think, this is hard for us to put ourselves in that context, but doesn't think that his slavery is abnormal. If you think, if you're a slave, and you expect to be a slave, and you're treated like a slave, that's the way you're supposed to be, because you're always a slave. You were born a slave, this is what you said, you were born a slave, you were raised a slave, you went into slavery, and you died a slave. Because that's how things are supposed to be. So when the slave is given maror, he doesn't think it's maror, because that's what he ate his whole life.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right. So the time of the maror is actually a time of freedom. Mm-hmm. Because when we taste the maror, it's bitter. And in reality, it's supposed to be sweet. It's an understanding that something is supposed to be different. Something is supposed to be... So he says the greatness of the Jewish people, the symbolism of the Jewish people, is that they cried out for something different. Right? We want something different. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, like you said, Barbie, it's something, when you're in a certain situation, you know what I'm saying? Everything is like, how do you yearn for something that's different if you're happy with what you have?
That's part of our problem.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's really part of our problem, that everything is very good. It's you know, so you have to taste the maror and appreciate that it's really bitter. And that it's not supposed to be what it is. What it is really bitter, and it's not really what it's supposed to taste like. In order to understand that there's something that's supposed to be sweet, there's something that's supposed to be better. Okay. Last thing. Where are my time was? 9:26. Say one more idea, and then we'll stop.
Like this, 9:24.
What? 9:24. Let's go to the matzah. Matzah zu she'anu ochlim al shum ma. Why do we eat this matzah? Al shum shelo yispik b'tzei kam sa'avotenu l'hachmitz. Because our forefathers' dough could not become chametz. Ad sh'nigla aleim melech ma'achei ha'melechim ha'kadosh baruch hu gala. Is that why we eat matzah on Pesach? Especially in this context. Right? Why do we eat matzah on Pesach? Why do you eat matzah on Pesach? Correct. Because it's a mitzvah, right? That's exactly. There's a commandment to eat matzah on Pesach. Okay. How do I know? It says kachav tochlu oto. One second. Al toch. Here we are. Ve'achlu et habasar ba'layla hazeh. You shall eat this meat on this night. Tzli'esh u'matzot al marurim yochluhu. You will eat it roasted on maror with matzah. Ever tell you this? When I used to do it in America, like the last few years when I was in the community, we did this thing called the Man Seder. And the reason I did the Man Seder because all these federations had this women's Seder. They always did this thing before Pesach. Very nice, like it was like a chocolate Seder, or it was like a this Seder, like a that Seder. So I said it's unfair because very often the men in our community, the men were expected to lead the Seder. And they were so busy doing whatever they were doing, they never, like, you know, women come to the Shiur, and the men never, like, sit down with the Haggadah before. So I did this thing called the Man Seder. Where I gave the men beer and steak because you couldn't get that in Michigan, and, right? You know what I'm saying? And then we studied the Haggadah. So one year, the first year, there was a guy, one of the members of the shul, who owned a slaughterhouse.
Wow.
Okay, right. Okay, so
people are real.
He bought lamb. So I said, okay, I want like a ton of lamb. So after we had our steak and our beer and the meal, I said, guys, there's going to be dessert, so don't fill up. Like, no, that's fine. Whatever, stop, whatever. For dessert, I had a whole wheat like laffa, okay, with roasted lamb and harif. Mm. I said, that's your dessert. They didn't have trouble eating it. It was very good. They somehow managed. I said, now you want to, when you eat your afikomen at the end of the Seder, I want you to think about this dessert. Like, and how easy it was to eat the afikomen, how easy it was to eat this. Right, that's matzah, right? Doesn't matter if it's, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Basically, shawarma lafa.
That's exactly it. Shawarma lafa, lamb, really, yeah. Right? With harif. That's the carbon pesach. Matzot tumarim yachluhu. And now when you eat your afikomen, it's again a symbol of what's the afikomen taste like? It's zecher. Your afikomen is yummy? When you eat your afikomen,
when you describe,
there's a cardboard, right? Everybody's
so
like,
so the mara used that's supposed to be sweet.
The mara brings brings out the flavor. Sure, absolutely, okay. But why do we eat it? Because we eat it because the Torah says to eat it. So why is Rabbi Gamliel saying, well, why are we eating this matzah? We're eating this matzah because they couldn't, because they, that's not why we're eating the matzah. We eat the matzah, especially in the context of the Pesach, because we had to, because they were commanded to eat the matzah in the context of the Korban Pesach. But he seems to switch it, and he says, no, we eat it to remember the fact that they're their batzeik.
Well, maybe he's just giving a reason why we're commanded to.
Do we do it like that?
No. No.
Will you eat the afikomen?
Matzah only. No meat. Absolutely not. In fact, we don't eat roasted meat on Pesach. Because, again, you ever notice that?
No.
We don't eat roasted meat on Pesach at all.
But that's a tradition, isn't it?
It's because it's an accepted tradition. It's halacha, actually. Because we don't have Korban Pesach. There's all these things we do that are not Korban Pesach. It's not that. Afikomen is only matzah. Right? It's like, no, it's not what it is. It's not right. It's the anti-Mat, it's the anti-Korban Pesach. Okay? So, Rav Kook is a very, very beautiful idea. He said, it's true that we ate it because that we were commanded to eat the matzah. He said, but there's a notion, what does the chametz represent? The chametz represents the Yetzirah within us. Right? The evil inclination, the aspect of the untrue nature of the Jewish people. Okay? And on this night of Geula, what?
What
the chametz. What's chametz? The seor shebeisa. Chametz represents that which is, like, interestingly enough, it's what happens when yeast ferments? It's a fermentation process. It's a rotting process in a sense, right? The chametz represents that which is negative. Bacteria. It's a yetzahara. The chametz in Jewish thought always represents the yetzahara. So he says, it's true that they were commanded to do it. Says, but Hashem took them out of Mitzrayim before their dough could rise, before the chametz could affect the dough of that was the Jewish people.
It's
a pure, beautiful idea.
Because they were on the last level.
They were on the last right. level. He says there was an inherent nature of the Jewish people, the dough that is the essence of the Jewish people, that Hashem took them out before their dough could rise. He says, and for that reason, okay, he says, Mishmeret HaMitzvot, these mitzvot that we keep, okay, that we keep them from generation to generation, okay, that will bring out the Geula, okay, just like their dough did not rise. In this power also, gam b'tzeikam shel b'neinu lo yachmitz la'olamim. We attest to the fact that our children, right, that the dough of the Jewish people in our children, in the future of the Jewish people, it also won't rise. That there's an inherent essence of the Jewish people, that's matzah. And that matzah represents what we truly are. And no matter how much chametz gets in involved and etc., right, matzah zu, we eat this matzah on this night to show that just as the Jewish people, even though they were in Egypt for all those years, maintained their essence and their true nature, so too, we too, maintain our essence and our true nature. And then when HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeems us, it will redeem us as a true people as well. Okay?
But then it can be used for good things.
Yeah, 100%. Well, oh, you mean the matzah? The chametz, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it can. But it is very just... Rav Kook was very much into that. He was very interested in the idea that there's a true essential Jewish people. And the idea was to remove the outside influences, the chametz as it were, and come back to our true inner sense, to our true sense as a people, to our true inner nature. And he says that's what the matzah represents. And that's the idea that we choose. It's true that we ate it because we were commanded. But when we eat it, we're focusing on this aspect, on the aspect of that we choose to eat it. That this is our choice. This is who we are. This is who we are as a people and as a nation. Yeah, very beautiful idea. All right. What's that? This one?
Yeah.
Hold on. Okay. Everybody should have a good, meaningful Pesach. Make it good. Make it nice. Make it what? We are not on next week. A week before Pesach.
They don't have much translation.
No, I don't think so. Okay.